Somebody's pounding on the side of a metal building, and your head's going boom, 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 and your heart's racing, and which is what they call rush.
Cocaine is an alkaloid found in leaves of the South American shrub Erythroxylon coca. It is a powerfully reinforcing psychostimulant. The drug induces a sense of exhilaration in the user primarily by blocking the reuptake of the neurotransmitter dopamine in the midbrain. In pre-Columbian times, the coca leaf was officially reserved for Inca royalty. The natives used coca for mystical, religious, social, nutritional, and medicinal purposes. Coqueros exploited its stimulant properties to ward off fatigue and hunger, enhance endurance, and to promote a benign sense of well-being. Coca was initially banned by the Spanish. In 1551, the Bishop of Cusco outlawed coca use on pain of death because it was an evil agent of the devil. The noted 16th century Orthodox Catholic artist Don Diego de Robles declared that coca is a plant that the devil invented for the total destruction of the natives. But the invaders discovered that without the Incan gift of the gods, the natives could barely work the fields or mine gold. So it came to be cultivated even by the Catholic Church. Coca leaves were distributed 3 or 4 times a day to the workers during brief rest breaks. Returning Spanish conquistadores introduced coca to Europe. Even Shakespeare may have smoked it.
And inhaled.
The coca plant is perishable and travels poorly, yet coca was touted as an elixir of life. In 1814, an editorial in Gentleman's Magazine urged researchers to begin experimentation so that coca could be used as a substitute for food so that people could live a month now and then without eating. The active ingredient of the coca plant was first isolated in the West by the German chemist Friedrich Gaedeke in 1855. He named it erythroxylon. Albert Niemann described an improved purification process for his PhD. He named it cocaine. Sigmund Freud, an early enthusiast, described cocaine as a magical drug. Freud wrote a song of praise in its honor, and he practiced extensive self-experimentation. To Sherlock Holmes, cocaine was so transcendentally stimulating and clarifying to the mind that its secondary action is a matter of small moment. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde during a 6-day cocaine binge. Doctors dispensed cocaine as an antidote to morphine addiction. Unfortunately, some of their patients made a habit of combining both. Cocaine was soon sold over the counter. Until 1916, one could buy it at Harrods. A kit labeled A Welcome Present for Friends at the Front contained cocaine, morphine, syringes, and spare needles. Cocaine was widely used in tonics, toothache cures, and patent medicines, in coca cigarettes guaranteed to lift depression, and in chocolate cocaine tablets. One fast-selling product, Rhino's Hay Fever and Catarrh Remedy, for when the nose is stuffed up, red, and sore, consisted of 99.9% pure cocaine. Prospective buyers were advised, in the words of pharmaceutical firm Park Davis, that cocaine could make the coward brave, the silent eloquent, and render the sufferer insensitive to pain. When combined with alcohol, the cocaine alkaloid yields a further potently reinforcing compound, now known to be cocaethylene. Thus, cocaine was a popular ingredient in wines, notably Vin Mariani. Cocaine wine received endorsement from prime ministers, royalty, and even the Pope. Architect Friedrich August Bartholdi remarked that if he only had used Vin Mariani earlier in his life, then he would have engineered the Statue of Liberty a few hundred meters higher.
I'd like to teach the world to sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
I'd like to buy the world of coke.
Coca-Cola was introduced in 1886 as a valuable brain tonic and cure for all nervous afflictions. Coca-Cola was promoted as a temperance drink, offering the virtues of coca without the vices of alcohol. The new beverage was invigorating and popular. Until 1903, a typical serving contained about 60 milligrams of cocaine. Sold today, it still contains an extract of coca leaves. The Coca-Cola Company imports 8 tons from South America each year. Nowadays, the leaves are used only for flavoring, since the drug has been removed. A coca leaf typically contains between 0.1 and 0.9% cocaine. If chewed in such form, it rarely presents the user with any social or medical problems. Indeed, coca chewing may be therapeutic. When the leaves are soaked and mashed, however, cocaine is then extracted as a coca paste. After the organic solvent used has evaporated, the coca paste is 60 to 80% pure. It is usually exported in the form of the salt, cocaine hydrochloride. This is the powdered cocaine most common until recently in the West. Yet old-fashioned cocaine hydrochloride still wasn't good enough. Sensation-hungry thrill-seekers have long sought the ultimate high from the ultimate rush. They haven't been satisfied with the enhanced mood, self-confidence, conversational prowess, and intensified consciousness to be derived from just snorting cocaine. Normally, only the intravenous route of administration could be expected to deliver the more potent and rapid hit they have been seeking. Yet there are very strong cultural prejudices against injecting recreational drugs, so a smokable form was developed. Since the hydrochloride salt decomposes at the temperature required to vaporize it, cocaine is instead converted to the liberated base form. Initially, free-base cocaine was typically produced using volatile solvents, usually ether. Unfortunately, this technique is physically dangerous. The solvent tends to ignite. Hence, a more convenient method of producing smokable freebase became popular. Its product is crack. To obtain crack cocaine, ordinary cocaine hydrochloride is concentrated by heating the drug in a solution of baking soda until the water evaporates. This type of base cocaine makes a cracking sound when heated, hence the name crack. Base cocaine vaporizes at a low temperature, so it can be easily inhaled via a heated pipe. As a rule of thumb, it is profoundly unwise to take crack cocaine. The brain has evolved a truly vicious set of negative feedback mechanisms. Nature is cruelly parsimonious with pleasure. The initial short-lived euphoria of a reinforcer as uniquely powerful as crack will be followed by a crash. This involves anxiety, depression, irritability, extreme fatigue, and probably paranoia. Physical health may deteriorate. An intense craving for more cocaine develops. In heavy users, stereotyped compulsive and repetitive patterns of behavior may occur. So may tactile hallucinations of insects crawling underneath the skin, called formication. Severe depressive conditions may follow. Agitated delirium, and also a syndrome sometimes known as toxic paranoid psychosis. The neural after effects of chronic cocaine use include changes in monoamine metabolites and uptake transporters. There is downregulation of dopamine D2 receptors to compensate for the drug-induced overstimulation. Thus, the brain's capacity to experience pleasure is diminished. The social consequences of heavy cocaine use can be equally unpleasant. Non-recreational users are likely eventually to alienate family and friends. They tend to become isolated and suspicious. Most of their money and time is spent thinking about how to get more of the drug. The compulsion may become utterly obsessive. The illusion of free will is likely to disappear. During a mission, essentially a 3 to 4 day crack binge, users may consume up to 50 rocks a day. To obtain more, crack addicts will often lie, cheat, steal, and commit crimes of violence. Once loved, partners and children may be callously cast aside. Whole communities can be disrupted by crack abuse, whereas in pathogens such as MDMA, which trigger the release of more serotonin than dopamine, will typically promote empathy, trust, compassionate love, and sociability. Dopaminergic drugs like cocaine and amphetamines, if taken on their own and to excess, can easily have the reverse effect. This story has complications. Cocaine's affinity for the serotonin transporter is actually greater than for the dopamine transporter. But simplistically, cocaine tends to be a selfish drug. The high from crack cocaine is intensely rewarding, but the experience is short-lived. Such immense well-being is unsustainable because its mechanisms don't subvert the systems of homeostatic feedback inhibition of the brain. So it's reckless to try crack cocaine at all, because its euphoric effect is so extraordinarily hard to forget. So is a crackhead inescapably doomed to an early grave? Or are there ways he can escape from the abyss? Perhaps. Most of the GIs who got hooked on unmistakably physically addictive heroin in Vietnam kicked the habit when they returned to the U.S. The veterans quit, often without undue difficulty, because most of the conditioned cues and reinforcers associated with narcotic drug use in Southeast Asia were missing back home. Thus, a complete change of environment, especially a holiday in the company of supportive family and drug-free friends, can help break a user's self-destructive cycle of coke binges. The brain is given time to recover. Cue-elicited craving is a major cause of relapse in recovering coke users. Indeed, this cue-elicited craving may even increase during the first few months of withdrawal. More controversially, cocaine vaccines may soon be licensed. They are designed to induce drug-specific antibodies in the bloodstream. In theory, cocaine-specific antibodies, which sequester the drug before its passage into the brain, will prevent the relapsing user getting high. Perhaps children at risk will be vaccinated at an early age. But the possible coercive use of vaccines against pleasure raises profound ethical problems. A future option for cocaine addicts who want to quit may be taking a dual dopamine serotonin releaser. PAL-287 is a rationally designed drug aimed at treating stimulant dependence while having minimal abuse potential of its own. Much more research will be needed before it ever gets a product license. Another future option may be the benzotropin analog JHW007. It serves as a functional antagonist to cocaine. JHW007 has a high affinity for the dopamine transporter, with minimal cocaine-like subjective and behavioral effects. Many cocaine users have a pre-existing psychiatric disorder, even by the touchstone of today's impoverished conception of mental health. In effect, such users are self-medicating, even if they ostensibly take cocaine hedonistically, for kicks. Such users need more effective medicine to flourish. So in place of cocaine, the option of taking one or more clinically therapeutic mood brighteners may be considered instead.
Cocaine habits mighty bad. It's the worst old habit that I ever had. Take a whiff on me.
Let's all take a whiff on Maddie now.
Hey, 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 hey.
Brings bass, rock, bass, chain, bass. Shooter, blow. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. You don't ever come down. Free bass.
Sì, liberata definitivamente, definitivamente. Kate Moss, cocaina.
Il video che vedete è rubato. Kate Moss, cocaina. La persona che sta riprendendo le immagini, cocaina. Kate Moss sta usando una telecamera nascosta, cocaina. Kate Moss ed è sicuramente conosciuta dalla cocaina fotomodella. Kate Moss, cocaina. Non sa di essere cocaina, per la ripresa, cocaina. Con chi la sta spiando, cocaina. Kate Moss, ride, cocaina.
Various wire reports today claim that Kate Moss will be arrested on drug charges when she returns to the UK. Moss is currently at the Meadows Drug Rehabilitation Clinic in Phoenix, but is said to be questioned by police when she returns. If convicted, Moss, who was secretly filmed doing lines of cocaine and cutting lines for her boyfriend Pete Doherty in a London recording studio, could face jail. Police have apparently already contacted her lawyers, and Scotland Yard is said to have ordered her arrest as soon as she lands on British soil. A source told The Sun UK,
"This is being dealt with very seriously due to her position in public life. We don't want her use of this deadly drug to glamorize it."
I don't drink or smoke and have never done a drug, which usually surprises people, and I'm never quite sure how to take that. Anyway, even with that, I find it hard to care if a drug user like Kate Moss gets arrested. I'm not positive how much safer I'll sleep tonight knowing that Kate Moss is behind bars. Most potheads I know can be decommissioned for hours just by telling them something mind-blowing like cats have grandparents. They'll lay on the couch for hours trying to wrap their minds around that one.
It's the 10 crack commandments. Man, can't tell me nothing about this coke. Can't tell me nothing about this crack, this weed, my hustling niggas. Niggas on the corner, I ain't forget you, niggas. Frank Shake Up, Crack King, Frank Wizza.
Out in dangerous drug dens and sees demons in fits of dope-induced paranoia, a new report claims. The sister-in-law of the multi-Grammy winner made the allegations as she spilled her own drug secrets to the National Enquirer in an exclusive report in its April 10th issue. Brown, the sister of Houston's husband Bobby Brown, admits she did crack with Whitney on many occasions, but the tattler says she went straight last August 24th. Tina Brown says she ratted on her ex drug buddy in hopes of forcing Houston to face the music and get help.
Maybe this will save her life,
she said. Lurid photos supplied by Brown and reportedly taken at Houston's Georgia home show a bathroom littered with drug paraphernalia, including powder-coated spoons, garbage, and debris. The once gorgeous velvet-voiced crooner who wooed Kevin Costner in The Bodyguard now spends her days locked in her bedroom amid piles of garbage, smoking crack, and ignoring personal hygiene, the tabloid says. The story also claims that Whitney hallucinates and sees demons when she's high. She bites and beats herself black and blue, but blames the devil for the injuries. Whitney allegedly loses her $6,000 set of false teeth when she's high, and once appeared toothless, scaring the kids at her niece's school. Whitney smokes as much as an 8-ball.
1/8 of an ounce.
Of crack at a time, mixing it with marijuana encased in a cigar wrap, according to Tina Brown. In 2004, a drug dealer called Bobby Brown and ordered him to remove the paranoid and out-of-control Whitney from his crack house.
Come and get your wife. I'm sick of this.
The dealer reportedly complained.
Hey! All right. MTV. Whoa! Makes me want to smoke crack.
Oh, yeah. Fake it till you make it.
I went down at the video store, making some change.
With a sparkle in my step
and a smile on my face.
Condominiums rising above. Videos are better than love.
Yeah, MTV one. MTV check. MTV makes me wanna smoke crack.
synergy. Yo, so when I was coming up in the crack industry in my neighborhood, I did okay. I mean, I had enough green to buy myself a nice crib and a pan full of stew and vodka, and he drove away.
Munich, a supermarket worker's discovery of 20 kilograms of cocaine hidden in a case of fruit had German police going bananas.
A spokesman for Bavarian State Police said officers dug through 4,600 cartons of bananas after a man working at a Munich grocery store found the drugs in a shipment of fruit from Colombia. A worker unloading a case saw that there weren't any bananas under the first layer, a spokesman for Bavarian State Police said Monday. In their place, he said, was
20 kilograms of drugs.
Around 30 police officers were set to search through the remainder of the shipment, but found no more suspicious packages. The bananas originally came from Colombia and were shipped through the Belgian port of Antwerp before being trucked into Germany. The investigation is underway.
A report in the latest issue of Pediatrics concludes that children treated with Ritalin are not more likely to abuse drugs as adults. A New York Times rundown on the report notes that Ritalin is chemically similar to cocaine. Just how similar? Both cocaine and methylphenidate, the generic name for Ritalin, are stimulants that target the dopamine system, which helps control the brain's functioning during pleasurable experiences. According to animal studies, Ritalin and cocaine act so much alike that they even compete for the same binding sites on neurons. Why then aren't the 4 to 6 million kids who take Ritalin daily acting more like the Studio 54 crowd circa 1977. One important difference is that Ritalin, administered as directed, acts much more slowly than cocaine. Nora Volkow, a senior scientist at Brookhaven National Laboratory, who has done extensive research on methylphenidate, found in a 2001 study that Ritalin takes upward of an hour to raise dopamine levels, cocaine a mere seconds. The exact reason why the uptake speed matters is unknown, but it seems to account for the different effects. Note, however, that not all Ritalin users swallow their pills. Recreational users frequently crush their supply into a fine powder for nasal delivery, or in extreme cases, melt it into an injectable solution. These administration methods increase the uptake speed, and users report that the high is not too terribly different from a cocaine buzz. The exact nature of the experience, however, depends on each person's unique brain chemistry. Many Ritalin users probably won't enjoy the kick, which can be comparable to ingesting 1 or 6 too many espressos.
Couldn't sleep, her nerves were slightly off the beat, until she saw her problem with a can of Ovaltine. Now Mr. Murphy claims she's getting awful thin, and all she says is give me some skin. Mop, who put the Benzedrine in Mrs. Murphy's Ovaltine? Now she wants to swing the Highland Fling. She says the Benzedrine's a thing that makes her spring. Ah, spring it now, give it.
The amphetamines are potent psychomotor stimulants. Their use causes a release of the excitatory neurotransmitters dopamine and norepinephrine from storage vesicles in the central nervous system. Amphetamines may be sniffed, swallowed, snorted, or injected. They induce exhilarating feelings of power, strength, energy, self-assertion, focus, and enhanced motivation. The need to sleep or eat is diminished. The release of dopamine typically induces a sense of aroused euphoria, which may last several hours. Unlike cocaine, amphetamine is not readily broken down by the body. Feelings are intensified. The user may feel like he can take on the world. The euphoria doesn't last. collapse, there follows an intense mental depression and fatigue. Amphetamine depletes the neuronal stores of dopamine in the mesolimbic pleasure centers of the brain. More than any other illegal drug, speed is associated with violence and antisocial behavior. Occasional light and infrequent use is probably relatively harmless, but heavy, chronic use can lead to stereotypes of behavior, depressive disorders, meth bugs akin to cocaine-induced formication, strain on the cardiovascular system, increasing behavioral disintegration, and outright amphetamine psychosis. Amphetamine is structurally related to ephedrine, a natural stimulant found in the plants of the genus ephedrine. It is also structurally related to adrenaline, the body's fight-or-flight hormone. Amphetamine was first synthesized by Edelano in Germany in 1887, but it only entered clinical medicine in the late 1920s when its psychostimulant effect was recognized. The U.S. medical and pharmaceutical establishment was worried that supplies of ephedra in faraway China would be exhausted. Amphetamine promised a cheap and synthetic substitute. Like ephedrine, amphetamine dilates the bronchial small sacs of the lungs, a great blessing for sufferers from breathing disorders. So, in 1932, Smith, Klein, and French introduced the famous Benzedrine inhaler. Amphetamine sulfate was aggressively marketed for asthmatics, hay fever sufferers, and anyone with a cold. Amphetamine was soon available in pill form, too. Pep pills were sold over-the-counter for all manner of ailments. Doctors prescribed amphetamine for depression, Parkinson's disease, epilepsy, travel sickness, night blindness, hyperactive disorders of children, obesity, narcolepsy, impotence, and apathy in old age. Soldiers on both sides in World War II consumed millions of amphetamine tablets. This practice sometimes caused states of quasi-psychotic aggression in the combatants. From 1942, Hitler received daily methamphetamine injections from his quack doctor, Morel. This corrupted his judgment, undermined his health, and probably changed the course of the war. Ice is a recrystallized methamphetamine hydrochloride, a potent stimulant. Ice will dissolve in water and break down to smaller particles. It generally takes the form of clear, crystallized chunks. Ice induces a profound sense of euphoria in the user by blocking the reuptake and stimulating the release of dopamine and norepinephrine in the central nervous system. Ice is a power drug. Methamphetamine use is typically followed by prolonged depression and fatigue. In contrast to base cocaine, smoking meth will extend its effects for up to 24 hours for ingestion. Smoked in a base form, meth is unappetizingly known on the street as snot. It can only be smoked. Snot gets its name on account of its resemblance to the natural product of the same name. It is very addictive. The effects of using methamphetamine may include extreme elation, wakefulness, alertness, enhanced self-confidence, aggression, talkativeness, loss of appetite, increased initiative, and increased physical activity. Withdrawal symptoms may include severe craving, deep depression, fatigue, inertia, paranoia, and psychosis. Smokable methamphetamine is similar to smokable cocaine. Crack, crack, crack.
Pfizer is set to start shipping a new version of its popular over-the-counter decongestant Sudafed. The new version can't be used to make methamphetamine.
Earlier this year, Oklahoma became the first state to make Sudafed and other products containing pseudoephedrine Schedule 5 drugs. Change has been hailed by law enforcement officials in Oklahoma and throughout the Midwest as the single most effective tool in the fight to shut down illegal meth labs. Pseudoephedrine is the prime ingredient in illegal meth. By making it difficult to get in large quantities, Oklahoma police say they've finally been able to make a significant dent in production. Pfizer spokesman Jay Kosminski says his company opposes laws that list pseudoephedrine as a Schedule 5 drug. But because states are limiting the availability of Sudafed, the company is introducing a new decongestant, Sudafed PE. Kosminski says Sudafed PE has long been sold in Europe and that it's just as effective as the old version. Pfizer says it wants to continue to make its old Sudafed available for consumers who've come to rely on it. And the company points out that not every state is struggling with the problem of illegal meth labs.
Paul Erdos, the man who loved only numbers, was one of the most brilliant and prolific mathematicians of the 20th century. Erdos spent much of his restless life on psychostimulants. As he once remarked, a mathematician is a device for turning coffee into theorems. But Erdos liked stronger medicine too. After his mother's death in 1971, Erdos became quite depressed. His physician prescribed amphetamines. Erdos took Benzedrine or Ritalin almost every day for the last 25 years of his life. Sometimes he took both. Long-term use of amphetamines often exacerbates depression. When used chronically, too, amphetamines usually induce stereotyped thought and behavior
eager rather than creativity. But Paul Erdos seems to be an exception. He felt living on speed helped him to create. At an age when most mathematicians have long since burnt out, his output was certainly prodigious. Strong dopaminergic drugs also tend to provoke or exacerbate obsessive-compulsive behavior. Here, their effect on Erdos may be more typical. Erdos hated to be touched, and he washed his hands some 50 times a day. Colleagues worried that Erdos might have become addicted. In 1979, he accepted a $500 bet from his friend Ronald Graham. Graham challenged Erdos to abstain from speed for 30 days. Erdos met the challenge, but his output sank dramatically. Erdos felt the progress of mathematics had been held up by a stupid wager. In an article by Paul Hoffman published in November 1987, Atlantic Monthly profiled Erdos and discussed his Benzedrin habit. Erdos liked the article, except for one thing. You shouldn't have mentioned the stuff about Benzedrin. It's not that you got it wrong, it's just that I don't want kids who are thinking about going into mathematics to think they have to take drugs to succeed, he said.
Now let's get right on down to the skit. A baby is brought into a world of pits. And if we could have talked that soon in a delivery room, it would have asked the nurse for a hit. The reason for this? The mother is a jerk. Excuse me, junkie, which brought the work of the old into a new life. What a way. But this what a way has been a way of today. Anyway, push couldn't shove me to understand a path to a basic.
Psychostimulant. It enhances wakefulness and vigilance, but its pharmacological profile is notably different from the amphetamines, Ritalin, or cocaine. Modafinil is less likely to cause jitteriness or anxiety, or lead to a hypersomnolent rebound effect than traditional stimulants. The normal elimination half-life of modafinil in humans is between 12 to 15 hours. Modafinil is proving clinically useful in the treatment of narcolepsy, a neurological disorder marked by uncontrollable attacks of daytime sleepiness. Narcolepsy is caused by dysfunction of a family of wakefulness-promoting and sleep-suppressing peptides. The orexins. Orexin neurons are activated by modafinil. Their activation is associated with enhanced pleasure-seeking and motivation, as well as arousal. Genetically modified orexin knockout animals offer a model of human narcolepsy. Narcoleptics suffer profound disturbances in normal sleeping patterns and variable degrees of depression. These symptoms can be reversed with modafinil. Selective orexin receptor agonists of the future may prove useful to both narcoleptics and the population at large. Modafinil is increasingly used as a lifestyle drug, a lucrative off-label market that its makers have not been unduly keen to discourage. Some prescribing physicians have reportedly been surprised at a previously hidden epidemic of narcolepsy among hardworking young professionals attending their surgeries.
Tired of writing about an announcement, I decided to conduct my own unscientific trial of modafinil. As the father of a 2-year-old, I live in a constant haze of sleep deprivation. I vowed to take modafinil for a week and see what happened. Could it transform a lazy, exhausted hack into a brilliant Jeffrey Goldberg? Or recast a grouchy father into Super Dad? I persuaded my doctor to prescribe me a week's supply of Provigil, 7 200-milligram pills. Here is the diary I kept.
Day 1, Monday.
6:45 a.m.
Woken up by my daughter after the usual 6.5 hours.
7 a.m.
I open the bottle. The pills are monstrous. I start to chicken out. I've never smoked pot, much less taken cocaine or amphetamines. I decide to halve the dosage. When I cut the first pill with my pocket knife, half of it shoots off my bureau, slides across the floor, and disappears under a dresser. No doubt to be discovered and eaten by my daughter someday in the near future. I pop the other 100-milligram half.
10 a.m.
At the office. I felt no rush, but alertness has snuck up on me. I am incredibly attentive, but not on edge. I really, really feel like working. A rare sensation.
12 p.m.
I reach for my usual lunchtime Coca-Cola, then think better of it. Caffeine plus this sprightliness, and I will be ping-ponging off the walls.
2 p.m.
This is when I usually fold. Today, I am the picture of vivacity. I am working about twice as fast as usual. I have a desperate urge to write, to make reporting calls, to finish my expense account, activities I religiously avoid. I find myself talking very loudly and quickly. A colleague says I am grinning like a feral chipmunk.
6 p.m.
Annoyed to have to leave the office when there is all this lovely work to do.
9 p.m.
Home. After dinner, I race upstairs to start working again. This is totally out of character, especially on a Monday night football evening.
12 a.m.
I want the day to keep going, but force myself to go to bed. I fall asleep easily enough, but it's a weird night. I have lots of dreams, which is unusual. All are about getting things done.
Day 2, Tuesday.
6:30 a.m. I wake up feeling good, cut another pill in two, and pop a hat.
9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
I work like a fiend again. These have been the two most productive days I've had in years. Idea for a new ProVigil ad slogan, Boss's Little Helper.
1 a.m.
Again, I'm alert through the late evening, so alert that I infuriate my wife by chattering at her long past her bedtime. This time when I do conk out, I sleep deeply.
Day 3, Wednesday, 7 a.m.
My one-man clinical trial starts to fall apart. Everyone says modafinil is not addictive, but I wake up worried about how long my supply will last. I count the pills and realize I have only 5.5 left. That's just an 11-day supply. I remember that I offered a sample to a friend yesterday. I am annoyed. One day less for me. I start to cut up the remaining pills, wondering if I can divide them into thirds instead of halves. I realize that maybe I can find a different supplier. I log on to the internet to see if I can get modafinil on the slide. I find it cheap at the discount Mexican pharmacy. I feel delighted and relieved. Then I feel terrified that I am delighted and relieved. Discount Mexican pharmacy?
7:30 a.m.
I end my experiment after 2 days. I am acting like a lunatic. I stash the remaining pills in a distant corner of the medicine cabinet. I calm myself with the reminder that I have 11 more great days to look forward to. So is modafinil a drug for future super people? Maybe. There are good reasons for doubt, though. The drug is approved only for treating narcolepsy, and doctors are not going to prescribe it like aspirin anytime soon. Though patients don't seem to get addicted to modafinil, the drug has been in use for only 10 years, and no one knows for certain that it's safe over the long term. I loved taking modafinil for 2 days. I worked supernaturally hard and well, but I'd be afraid to make it a habit. I'll use it again for a special occasion, when I am late for a deadline, perhaps. In the meantime, I'll just yawn my way through the mid-afternoon.
Listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.